You're the best horsewoman in the county. Should we ride?
What do you think of Miss Ingram, Jane?
Do you think I'm in love with Miss Ingram?
I've got to ask. Do you faint at the sight of blood?
She's done for me.
Nonsense. The doctor's here. You're in no danger.
There are teeth marks here.
I need to have a leave of absence to see a sick lady who's asked for me.
What sick lady?
Her name is Reed. She is my uncle's wife.
Don't go, Jane. What will I do without your help?
As the carriage carries Jane away from Thornfield, someone is watching her from the North Tower. BBC. Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Screenplay by Sandy Welsh. Ruth Wilson. Toby Stevens. Francesca Annis, Lorraine Ashbourne, Christina Cole, Pam Ferris, Tara Fitzgerald, Aidan McArdle. Directed by Susanna White. Returning to her Aunt Reed's house, Jane has flashbacks to her childhood.
No! Not the Red Room! Not the Red Room! I am not being witched! No! Not the Red Room! No! Don't take me to the Red Room!
She carries on upstairs, pausing to look at the family portrait where she is missing.
Jane Eyre?
She's not part of the family.
Jane steps into a room where she finds her two cousins, Eliza and Georgiana.
Miss Eyre? You have not grown tall.
How is Mrs. Reed?
Mrs. Reed? Oh, you mean Mama. She's extremely unwell. I doubt you can see her tonight.
If you would just step upstairs and tell her I've come, I would be much obliged to you.
Georgiana looks shocked.
She's asked for me to come. I would not like to keep her waiting.
Soon after, Jane enters a room where she finds Bessie.
Mrs. is awake. I've told her that you're here.
Jane carries on, stepping through a doorway into her aunt's bedchamber. The frail old woman is lying in bed, her breathing laboured and her brow glistening with perspiration.
Who are you?
I'm Jane Eyre. How are you, aunt?
You're not Jane Eyre. I've had such trouble with that child. She was mad. A fiend. I sent her away to Lowood where the fever broke out and many died. But she didn't die. I wish she had.
Why do you hate Jane Eyre so?
I hated her mother. She was my husband's favourite sister. When she died, he cried like a baby. And he insisted on sending for the child. Sickly, whining thing. He wailed in its cradle all night long. And Reed doted on it, the fool. Even in his last illness, he called for it rather than his own children. Where's John? He always wants money. He's a fine boy, and he loves me. But I don't know where to get the money. Where's John?
She knows well enough he's gone. That's why she'll never leave this bed.
Where's John?
She doesn't mean it, Miss Jane, half of what she says.
It's all right, Bessie. I don't mind. No, really, I don't.
You used to get upset. More than upset. But now you've grown into such a confident young woman. Who could have known it? Suppose you have friends now to confide in. So your troubles don't plague you so much. That must be it.
Yes. I do have a friend. Someone who... When I talk to them, they understand everything I say. Now, they would laugh if I told them about Mrs. Reed. They're so in tune with me. And they know my thoughts before I even think them, certainly before I've put them into words.
I always said you'd do well. I'm pleased that when you leave here, you can go home to such people.
My friend is to be married soon, it's almost certain.
But she will not live far away. Maybe you can visit.
Yes, of course. That may be so.
Spring at Thornfield. Lady Ingram is strolling through the grounds.
Eshton here says that that swallow there heads south at the merest shiver of winter, travels all the way to the most southern tip of Africa, and then comes back here to this precise spot. And I say, how do you know? I say, you all look exactly the same.
And why would they come back here and not stay where it is warm?
It is in their nature. It is what they must do. They must come home. What do you think, Edward?
A gloomy Rochester turns away from the window. Night falls, and Adele enters the drawing room holding the train of a lady.
That's enough. Get along now.
Adele pirouettes to Lady Ingram and performs an elaborate curtsy.
Shouldn't you be in bed?
No, madame. Oh, that necklace is so beautiful.
I wouldn't have thought I'd say it. It's a pity the governess isn't here. I expect you're glad she stays away so long.
Oh, no, I wish she would come back. I like her best of all, except for Monsieur Rochester, of course.
When Monsieur Rochester sees fit to make a certain announcement, that young lady will feel the benefits of a good English boarding school.
Wearing a beautiful pale blue gown and with her blonde hair tied up in ringlets, Blanche is walking along a candlelit corridor. She pauses outside Rochester's study and sees him standing by the fire, bathed in its orange glow. When she steps inside, he casts his eye over her.
Is there a problem?
Not at all. I was just taking a stroll through the hall before dinner.
And did you like what you saw?
Naturally. Could, of course, do with a little management. A few new furnishings here and there.
And you think you'd like to, take all this on?
She smiles coyly.
What do you really want, Blanche?
Watching her closely, he takes a puff of his cigar. In the drawing room of her aunt's house, Jane is sitting sketching in charcoal. Beside her, Eliza is reading a book, while her sister Georgiana reclines on a sofa and fans herself. With an air of boredom, Georgiana turns and casually looks at Eliza.
If only Aunt Gibson would invite me up to town.
Eliza looks at the clock, puts down her book, then picks up some needlework.
It would be so much better if only I could get away for a month or two, until it was all over.
Georgiana, if there were ever a more vain, absurd animal than you, you are completely useless. And in being useless, seek only to cling on to others. And if no one can be found to burden themselves with such a fat, weak, puffy, useless thing, you complain that you are ill-treated and neglected. You must be flattered, you must be admired, or you languish and die away. Well, everyone knows you are the most selfish, heartless creature in existence. I know very well your spite and your hatred.
You ruined my chances with Lord Vere. You could not bear the thought that I would be raised into circles where you dare not show your face.
Let me give you this advice. 'Tis the first and last I shall offer you. If you divide each day into sections and perform some useful task to timetable, the day will be over before you know it. You'll be dependent upon your own senses and not have to be flattered and admired in order to know that you exist. After my mother's death, the hour of her burial, I wash my hands of you. It will be as if you and I had never known each other. And if we were the only two human beings left alone on Earth together, I would not address one more word to you.
Georgiana flees the room. Looking troubled, Jane glances at Eliza, then returns to her sketch.
Who is that?
It's my Aunt Reed, Jane Eyre. You asked to see me?
Yes, I did. I'm very ill, you know. I need to ease my mind before I die. I have done you wrong twice, Jane Eyre. One was to break the promise I made to my husband to bring you up as my own child. You know that. Oh. Go to my dressing table.
Jane gets up from the bedside and crosses the room to the dressing table.
Open it. Take out and read the letter you find there.
Jane does as her aunt bids her, then returns to the bedside with the letter.
Madam, will you have the goodness to send me the address of my niece, Jane Eyre? I wish her to join me in Madeira. Fortune has blessed me, and as I'm unmarried and childless, I wish to adopt her and bequeath to her all I have when I die. I am, madam, sincerely yours, John Eyre. But this was written 3 years ago. Why did you never tell me I had an uncle who was alive?
Because I hated you too much. I could not forgive you.
Forgive me, I...
For your conduct. I take you on and you treat me with contempt. You talk to me like a vile, wild animal.
Forgive me my passionate nature. I was a child, aunt. Let us forgive each other now.
I could not forget. I took my revenge. I wrote to your uncle. I told him Jane Eyre was dead, that she had died of a fever at Lowood School. See? I had my revenge. Now you may have yours. You can tell him of my falsehood. I will be dead by morning, so I don't care. Please.
Supporting her aunt's head, Jane helps her to sip some water. Slowly, her aunt rests her head back on the pillow, then closes her eyes. Jane takes her hand.
I forgive you, Aunt Reed. Whether you wish it or not, I do truly forgive you.
After kissing her aunt on the cheek, She glances down at the letter, then takes her leave. Now, four horses splash through muddy puddles as they pull a carriage through the countryside. Beside a gate, the driver slows to a stop. A footman gets down, but before he can open the door, Jane has already alighted.
Take my trunk on up to Thornfield, would you?
Will you ride, miss? You've had a very long journey.
No, I'm nearly home. It's my favourite walk.
After stepping over a low stone wall, Jane takes a few paces, then stops when she sees Thornfield nestling in the valley before her. With an excited smile, she sets off towards it. As she passes a tree, she sees Rochester sitting underneath it, looking through a telescope, and tries to carry on her way.
There you are! You're back! Ungrateful thing. I gave you leave for a week and you've gone a whole month. I want my money back. Since you've had me so little in your thoughts.
I said I would be gone for as long as I was needed. And I was. Then you still owe me wages.
Come, let's get you home. And Adele will scream and shout, Bienvenue.
Thank you. For your great kindness, I'm strangely glad to get back again to you. And wherever you are is my home. Is my true home.
He lowers his gaze pensively, then reaches for his telescope and follows on after her. Now crossing the bridge side by side, they approach the house in companionable silence. Then Jane sees trunks being loaded into a carriage and she looks alarmed.
Are you going?
Rochester smiles but doesn't respond. Eshton is standing beside the carriage.
See, Eshton? Our swallow has come home.
Eshton is using my coach to pursue some unusual twins.
Yes, one, a Belgian, has been in a sort of a deep sleep for some 8 months, and he has been woken by a twin, now living in Toulouse, by the way, that he never even knew existed. It's amazing. Well, you don't think it possible that two minds can be so in tune that they communicate across the country? They can call out to each other across space and time.
You're one of the world's most curious people, Eshton.
And you're one of the world's most cynical, Rochester.
Nonsense! I'm the most romantic person I know.
They shake hands.
Be off with you.
Miss Sir,
amazing
Miss
minds Sir. Await your magnifying glass.
Miss Sir. Oh, Jane. Oh, you're back.
Miss Sir.
No. Oh.
Mrs. Fairfax and Adele embrace Jane warmly. Soon after, inside, maids are busy packing trunks when Adele twirls into the path of Lady Ingram.
Ah, at last, the governess has returned from her travels. Can't you teach that child something so she won't be under our feet?
It's just such a pity we can't stay for longer. But it's the Warreners' summer ball next week.
Well, Blanche and I, we won't be there. We will be occupied with a more important event. I'm sir.
Later, Rochester leads Blanche by the hand from the house to a waiting carriage, unaware that Jane is watching them from an upstairs window. At the carriage door, Blanche turns and exchanges a look with Rochester before climbing in next to her mother.
Don't worry, you'll see her again soon. Ingram Park is a short journey for an enthusiastic rider.
Indeed. Safe journey.
As Rochester lingers a moment to see the carriage depart, Jane continues to watch him. Later, he finds her in the library.
Ah! There you are. Is Adele in bed?
You're back to our routine very quickly. Now that all our house guests are gone, it's like it has always been. What's that?
It is a book I used to read as a child. My escape book. I used to imagine that one day I could go anywhere I wanted. I took it with me to Lowood.
And now?
Now, I think it can go here very well.
Now, monsieur, if we're very lucky, we might see some dragonflies.
Did I ever tell you of my travels in the Blue Mountains of Mongolia? And you can tell me of your travels in the black and gloomy forests of your childhood memories.
So the vain, facetious cousin, Georgiana, found a mate within days of your aunt's funeral.
So it seems.
And what of the nun?
I believe Eliza will settle in her French convent, never to return to worldly pleasures. I give her but a few years to become Mother Superior.
So you returned to Gateshead half knowing that you wouldn't find the old lady repentant or forgiving or the least bit pleased to see Jane Eyre, and this is how things transpired. And yet Jane Eyre doesn't seem to be troubled that she has no family. No one in the world outside of Thornfield who wishes her well.
No. I have no family to speak of. But I hear you have been making plans of your own. I assume Miss Blanche's departure from Thornfield is only temporary. I mean, as Adele's governess, it is my duty to help you decide on a suitable school.
Yes. Yes, indeed, and we mustn't forget that when I do finally relinquish my bachelor ways, we must find you a suitable position. What do you think of Ireland?
When she looks at him, he averts his gaze.
We don't have to worry about that now. Not for a good while yet.
Oh, look. Look. See the emerald wings? Come.
Face unseen, the figure by the North Tower window stands watching them.
So to find half of anything, we divide it into two equal parts.
Adele is distracted by a carriage.
Elle est arrivée. Oh, elle est très belle.
In English, please, Adele.
But I think it must be française, monsieur. Surely it must be.
Holding up her skirts, Adele hurries outside to the small white carriage.
What do you think? It's a beauty, isn't it? You think it'll do for Mrs. Rochester? Won't she look like Queen Boadicea?
Oh, thank you.
Leaning back on those purple cushions? Huh? You know, Jane, I wish I were a little better suited to matching her in looks. Tell me, magician that you are you absolutely sure you don't have a potion that can make me more handsome?
I have told you before. That would be past the power of magic, sir. Come on, Adele.
As Jane walks away, Rochester nods to himself. Later, the three of them are sitting under a tree in the sun-filled garden.
Monsieur Rochester, I want you to tell me about the Caribbean islands again. Sophie has taught me a song.
Adele stands up.
Moana. La fana, la vierge, madame, Marie.
All right, incorrigible one. You must imagine a restaurant. No, let's say a meeting place. And many respectable people come here at night to socialize. You must imagine brilliant reds, pinks, most exotic perfume flowers, delightful, passionate music. The women are, of course, very beautiful. They wear bright silks, ambers, sapphires, emeralds. They're very seductive, but they are also mysterious. Tantalizing.
His eyes flit up to the North Tower. Then he looks at Jane, who's watching Adele sing.
Stop that noise! I'll send you to school in the morning, you're like a wild animal.
Adele looks down, upset. Checking his temper, Rochester becomes composed once again.
The Caribbean is not as beautiful as it seems, Adele. I came back to escape.
He catches Jane looking at him sympathetically. Then, with a sad expression, he turns his attention back to the book he was reading. The figure in the tower watches as Adele gets up and leaves Jane and Rochester alone. Now, Jane's with Mrs. Fairfax.
Summer's been with us forever this year. I can't remember when it stayed so long. And Mr. Rochester has stayed with it. He has never been here at Thornfield for this length of time. He's found something to keep him from his travels. Mind you, I think there must have been a little disagreement.
Really?
Well, Ingram Park is not very far away. Not for an ardent suitor, yet he has not saddled a horse for several weeks. He spends his evenings either talking to you or prowling the lower gardens like a bear, the gardener says. Of course, he's got the household business to worry about.
What do you mean?
Well, he'll be wanting to find us suitable positions. After the wedding. Oh, no, he will take care over that, I'm sure. I told you, he's a good master.
In the grounds, Jane and Rochester stand in the shadow of an oak tree.
Thornfield is pleasant in the summer, isn't it, Jane?
Yes, sir.
You've become attached to the place.
She gives a guarded nod.
Yes, sir.
And you'll be sad to leave?
Yes. Must I leave, sir? Must I leave Thornfield?
Yes, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you must.
You're to be married.
Exactly. Precisely. As you, with your usual acuteness, have already predicted, when I do marry, Adele must go to school and you must find a new situation.
Yes, sir, I will advertise immediately.
No, you won't. I've already found you a place.
Ireland is a long way away, sir. From Thornfield, it is a long way away from you, sir.
Unable to bear his penetrating gaze, she looks away. He bridges the gap between them, then leads her by the elbow to a nearby rock. They lean back against it, then he takes a handkerchief from his pocket. They sit in silence, not looking at one another.
We've been good friends, haven't we, Jane? It's difficult to part from the friend and know you will never meet them again. And you and I, it's like we were a pair of Eshton's twins, bound together in some unworldly way, sharing a spirit we're so alike. When we are parted, when you leave me, I believe that bond will snap and I will bleed inwardly. Do you forget me after a while?
I would never forget you. How can you imagine that? What do you think I am? I wish I'd never been born. I wish I'd never come here. I wish I'd never grown to love Thornfield. I love Thornfield. I love it because I have lived a full life. I have not been trampled on. I have been treated as an equal. You have treated me as an equal. You are the best person I know, and I cannot bear the thought of having to leave you.
Must you leave me, Jane?
Why, of course I must, because you have a wife.
What do you mean?
Blanche Ingram, of course. You're as good as married to her. You promised her.
I have not promised Blanche anything.
To someone who is inferior to you. Someone who you have no sympathy with. Of course I must go. Do you think that I'm a machine? That I can bear it? Do you think, because I'm poor, plain, obscure and little, that I have no heart? That I am without soul? I have as much heart as you and as much soul. And if God had given me some beauty and wealth, I would make it as hard for you to leave me as it is now for me to leave you.
You will not leave me, Jane.
They let me go.
Jane, don't struggle so.
I'm a free person, and I'll go and do as I please.
Yes, you will. You will decide your own destiny. Jane, I offer you my hand, my heart, and all my possessions.
You laugh at me.
Oh, no. Jane, I want you to live with me. To pass through life as my second self. My best earthly companion. Jane, have you no faith in me?
None whatsoever.
You doubt me?
Absolutely.
Jane, you know I don't love Blanche. I love you. Like my own flesh. Jane, say that you will marry me. Say it quickly. Jane, you accept me.
Are you in earnest? I can hardly believe you.
I swear.
And sir.
Call me by my name. Call me Edward.
And Edward, I will marry you.
He kisses her urgently.
Oh, God, forgive me. I'll let no man meddle with me. I am the keeper.
There is no one to meddle. I have no family to interfere.
No.
They kiss again. They look up at the sky, laughing. Then he leads her by the hand through the rain. A few moments later, lightning strikes the oak tree, sending out a flurry of leaves. Jane and Rochester run across the courtyard, then take shelter from the rain.
Run and take off those wet things.
He draws her to him for a lingering kiss.
Good night.
They savor another kiss. Then he strokes her hair.
Good night, my darling.
When she makes to leave, he drags her back for yet another kiss. Finally, they part, just as Mrs. Fairfax appears with a lantern. She throws her master a disapproving look. Lying in bed, a smile spreads across Jane's face. Then she sits up. Still wearing her plain grey dress, but with her long brown hair unpinned and hanging over her shoulders, she goes to a mirror and studies her reflection. She touches her face with both hands and smiles. Carefree, she twirls back to the bed and flops back onto it. Later that morning, having changed into a lighter, less sober day dress, Jane enters the kitchen and finds Mrs. Fairfax sitting looking upset.
I feel so astonished. I hardly know what to say to you, Miss Eyre. Mr. Rochester came in here about 5 minutes ago to tell me that he had asked you to marry him. God, this cannot be true.
Jane smiles and nods.
But why? I'm sorry to offend you, Jane, but you are so young. You know nothing of men. I have noticed that Mr. Rochester seemed to make you a favourite, but I thought...
That I was too monstrous to love.
No. I meant I thought you too level-headed. Too sensible a young woman to be so overwhelmed.
Later, Jane is in Rochester's arms.
Overwhelmed?
They kiss.
Well, are you overwhelmed?
I believe the good woman thought I'd forgotten my station, and you yours.
Little does she know that I'm the servant and you the mistress. I'm sorry. I know that look.
She thinks I do not know myself, and that you are doing as all men must.
Jane, she doesn't know us.
They share a lingering kiss, then she pulls away.
All the same, sir.
Sir, when did I become sir again? Last night, you stood before the heavens and pronounced yourself my equal. That's the Jane I want to marry, to share my life. Will you dine with me tonight?
No, sir.
Edward. You promised to call me Edward.
Until we marry, if we marry.
In 1 month, one short month, you'll be Mrs. Rochester or I'll be damned.
Then until that morning, I will call you Mr. Rochester. Mm. That is halfway between Edward and sir. I'll continue to teach Adele.
Ugh.
We will go on as before. Then it will be seen that this idea, this marriage, is a sensible proposition.
I'm not interested in pleasing Mrs. Fairfax. But for you. For you, I will obey. Now hurry up and get your bonnet, or we'll be late.
For what?
We're going to town.
Outside, Rochester finds Adele and Pilot in the white carriage.
Oh, no. You're not coming. Out of there now.
Oh, please let me come, sir.
No, absolutely not. Jane and I, Miss Eyre and I, are going shopping by ourselves.
Shopping? Were you listening to a word I said?
Just today. To celebrate. But come, come, you can't get married in that.
I will not be married at all if you force me into that ridiculous carriage.
John, bring up the other carriage.
And Adele shall come too.
Adele gives Jane a kiss. Now, under a bright sky, the carriage is making its way through the countryside. Inside, Rochester tries to hold Jane's white-gloved hand, but she firmly pushes him away. He tries again.
No.
Undeterred, he tries again, and she slaps his handbag, then puts Adele between them.
I'll send her to school yet.
Will I go without Mademoiselle?
Absolutely, sans Mademoiselle. I'm going to take Mademoiselle away. To Europe first, where I will take her to all the grand palaces and present her to all the kings and queens.
You cannot do that, because she has no jewels.
Oh, she will have. In London, there's a very special box filled with jewels. I will send for them immediately, and Mademoiselle will be covered in them from head to toe while she teaches you mathematics. And when Madame, as you will be then, when Madame is tired of all those kings and queens, I will take her to a villa, whitewashed and secluded, on the edge of the Emerald Mediterranean.
Now in a dress shop.
Yes, yes, this will do very well. We need at least 6 day dresses. These are the evening fabrics.
We'll need 3 at the most.
And this for the veil?
No, even Adele would draw a line at that. There. This is much more suitable.
Now, evening dresses.
A woman looks Jane up and down. Rochester tries a diamond necklace on Adele.
Mademoiselle, what do you think?
No.
This is for Mademoiselle.
She picks out a string of pearls and hands it to him.
Child knows you better than I do. I'll take it.
The river cutting through the peaceful countryside around Thornfield. In her room, Jane is gazing down at the pearl necklace on her writing table. She smiles excitedly.
Jane Eyre will not be overwhelmed.
She covers the necklace with its blue velvet wallet, then ties the ribbons. By the light of a candle, she reaches for a pen, dips it into some ink, then begins to write. She writes, John Eyre, Esquire, Madeira. Later, in Adele's bedroom.
Miss Eyre, you will really be going the minute after the wedding?
Yes.
You will stay the night at the Grand London Hotel and then take the steamboat to France?
Yes.
I wish I could go with you.
You must stay here. But don't worry, Mr. Rochester. We will pick out a good school for you.
They will hit me and starve me.
No. I promise I won't let that happen.
Adele lies down, upset. With a loving smile, Jane kisses her on the head. Now, tossing and turning in her own bed, Jane is plagued by nightmares. She's outside the gates of Thornfield clutching a baby. On the other side, Blanche talks with Rochester, then goes up to her.
Go.
Jane rattles the gates, then sees Rochester riding off on his horse. When she screams at him, no, no sound comes out. Then she's blinded by a white light. In her bedroom, Jane awakes and is blinded by a candle that's being held in front of her face. She sees the hand carrying the candle retreat into the pitch blackness.
Who's there?
The candle advances on her.
George, what time did your master say he'd be home?
Don't worry, miss. He has been away one night already. He will not stay away another.
As brooding storm clouds gather, Rochester appears over the brow of a hill on his horse. Walking up towards him, Jane pauses for a moment. The horse's hooves churn up the mud as he rides down to meet her.
So I'm only gone for 24 hours and I return to this. Can't do without me, clearly.
He kisses her, then notices her troubled expression.
Is anything wrong?
Her wedding dress is in tatters.
It was not Sophie. It was not Mrs. Fairfax. It was not even Grace Poole.
But you were dreaming.
I had been dreaming, but then I awoke.
Thank God nothing worse happened. Thank God you're safe.
It was not Grace Poole.
Who else could it have been?
I was not dreaming.
And the rest of your dream? Is Thornfield a neglected ruin? Have I left you without so much as a word?
No.
So? Put it down to your anxieties. Your natural anxieties about the new life you're about to enter.
Yesterday I was very busy and happy packing. I was not worried about the future. I think it a glorious thing to have the hope of living with you. Because I love you. It was a fine day yesterday.
Look. Storm is gone.
A new day, and Jane's wearing her simple white wedding dress with Sophie attending to her.
Voilà, c'est très joli ça. Laissez-moi voir. Attendez. Voilà.
Merci, Sophie.
Attendez, mademoiselle. Regardez-vous.
Jane looks at herself in the mirror.
Vous êtes très belle, madame.
Jane glances over her shoulder at Sophie and smiles. Rochester is pacing the hallway when Jane appears on the stairs and smiles at him shyly.
At last, there you are.
Her face falls and his expression softens. He offers her his hand and takes in her appearance.
How could I have thought that that gaudy veil would have suited you better?
Mr. John, getting the carriage ready.
Yes, sir.
Is the luggage brought down?
Yes, sir.
Good. Have it strapped and ready on the carriage. We're leaving the moment we return from the church.
Yes, sir.
In a hurry, Rochester is pulling Jane by the hand through the churchyard. She stumbles.
I'm sorry, Jane. Are you ready?
She smiles, then they carry on towards the church. Two men are approaching.
I require and charge you both, as you will answer at the dreadful day of judgment, when the secrets of all hearts shall be disclosed, that if either of you know any impediment why you may not lawfully be joined in matrimony, you do now confess it. Be you well assured that so many as are coupled together otherwise than God's word doth allow, are not joined together by God, neither is their matrimony lawful.
The marriage cannot go on. I declare the existence of an impediment.
Proceed. I said proceed.
I cannot proceed without some investigation.
Perhaps it might be got over, explained away.
I hardly think so. It is insuperable. Mr. Rochester has a wife, now living.
Who are you?
My name's Briggs, a solicitor.
And you would thrust on me a wife?
I would remind you of her existence, sir, which the law recognizes if you do not.
I have no wife.
Edward Fairfax Rochester of Thornfield Hall was married to Bertha Antoinetta Mason at San Benedictus Church in Spanish Town, Jamaica, on the 18th day of March, 1825.
If that is a genuine document, it doesn't prove that the woman mentioned there is still living.
She was living 3 months ago. I have a witness to the fact.
Briggs steps aside, and Rochester slowly turns around to see Mason standing in the aisle. Rochester leaves Jane's side and goes over to him.
What have you to say? What have you to say?
Gentlemen, this is a place of God.
Rochester turns away, while Jane stands trying to take in what's happening.
My sister is living at Thornfield Hall. I saw her there last June.
Impossible. I'm an old resident of this neighborhood, sir, and I've never heard of a Mrs. Rochester at Thornfield Hall.
No, by God. I took care that none would. Enough. That is enough. Clear the church. There will be no wedding today.
Before you go, however, I bid you come up to the house.
He takes Jane's hand.
I have someone I wish you to meet.
He leads her back down the aisle. With the wind blowing in her veil, Jane allows Rochester to lead her away from the church. Briggs, Mason, the clergyman, and church clerk are following them. At Thornfield, they pass the carriage in the courtyard.
Take it back to the coach house, John. It won't be needed today.
Very good, sir.
They enter the house.
Away with you, congratulations! You're 15 years too late.
Moments later, Rochester leads the party up the dark staircase in the North Tower. They stop at a door and he inserts a key.
Do you remember this room, Mason? Where you almost lost your life.
On the other side of the door, Grace Poole looks up from her sewing as they enter the room.
Morning, Mrs. Poole. How's your charge this morning?
A little touchy, sir. We're having some breakfast, but she's calm now. Be very careful, sir.
Aren't I always, Grace?
We'd better leave.
Why, Richard? Why are you frightened? Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce you to my wife?
On the far side of the room, a woman in her nightgown with long black hair turns to them with a sweet smile, then gestures. Rochester stares at her without emotion. When Grace Poole steps back, the woman gets a clear view of Jane still in her wedding gown. Her face hardens like steel, and a manic look enters her eye.
Puta!
She goes to attack Jane, but Rochester steps in. Grace pulls her off him.
Leave quickly, sir. She will be calm again. I will handle her, sir.
They step into the adjoining room and Rochester locks the door.
That was my wife. As some of you know, my father was a greedy man who wanted to preserve his estate by marrying his younger son off to a wife who would bring him a rich dowry. I was sent to the Caribbean where, knowing my predilection for dark, handsome women, I was tricked by Mason and his father into pursuing his sister, Bertha, who was as beautiful as the glittering stars and just as tantalizing.
The young Rochester and Bertha kiss passionately.
I was married before I knew it. Before I had met the mother, who was, I found out later at that time, and had been for many years incarcerated in a mental asylum, and that insanity ran through the family like a black river of disease. It has been half a day before I realized what manner of wife I'd been tricked into. It was but a few weeks before the full extent of her illness was made clear to me.
Bertha, calm down.
An illness which has grown in violence and foulness at an ever-increasing pace. Then, serves him right for his wickedness, my father died. And my brother straight behind, so I inherited everything anyway. The Rochester fortune intact. I brought her back with me to England, intending to make Thornfield a comfortable prison for her and for me. I have another house. Hidden away, I could have kept her there. Where the damp, inclement air might have rid me of her burden, I could have done that, and no one would have blamed me. But I left her here, with Grace, while I traveled the world trying to forget the horrors at home. Until one day. One day this girl appeared who knew nothing of this. This girl. Who stands so quiet and grave at the mouth of hell. This girl. Who is all quietness
and sanity. And innocence. Do you wonder why I wanted her? Why I risked the wrath of God to get her? And now I must ask you to leave. I must see to my wife.
In tears, Jane flees the room, and Rochester returns to Bertha. Now alone, Jane perches on the end of her bed and looks down at her wedding dress. She reaches up and takes off her pearl necklace.
Jane?
Forgive me. I couldn't tell you. I knew you'd never stay. Jane, come away with me. We'll go and live together in that whitewashed villa away from everyone. You have no family to care, to interfere with us.
Rochester takes a step back from the door and spends a moment thinking. Then he knocks again.
Jane. Jane, can you hear me?
Jane carefully takes off her veil.
Jane.
She sets it down on the bed, then slowly unbuttons the lace cuffs of her dress. Then she unbuttons the collar, her face sad but composed. She peels the dress down over her underskirt to the floor. She then puts on her old grey governess's dress. With her wedding attire neatly folded, she sets the pile down on a chair, then goes to the mirror. As she stands soberly taking in her own reflection, she pins up a curl that's come free. Then, in the cold grey light, she perches on the end of the bed, then lies back. She gazes sadly out of the window, then closes her eyes.